Chapter 3. That night I didn't sleep. I kept listening to the creaks and groans of our apartment, wondering if someone was watching us. It's funny how many sounds a night makes, especially when you're nervous. At one point, I swear I heard someone walking in our kitchen. I even grabbed Weddle's old baseball bat in case I needed to hit something. Just some pipes in the wall making noise. I checked all the closets and then glanced at our living room window to make sure Frankie's Le Mans wasn't out there. Nothing. Somewhere far away, sirens screamed, and a memory of Weddle's ambulance ride to the hospital flashed in my mind. My mother and I followed in a neighbor's car, and we could see paramedics pumping Weddle's chest through the small ambulance window. My mother screamed like she was being tortured. It was a real-life nightmare, worse than anything I ever dreamed. I shook off the memory, closed our blinds, and headed back to my room. In the hallway, my mother had set up a tiny table beneath an old picture of Weddle. Two red church candles were burning under the photo. I could see my brother's face dimly in the dark. It was like he was watching me. "I miss you, little brother," I whispered to his picture. The last time I whispered to Weddle was on a night last spring. He had a bad dream and he came into my room and woke me up. "Martin, I'm scared," he said, his eyes half closed. "Don't worry," I said to him. "Ain't nothing in a dream that can hurt you." He yawned and rubbed his eyes. It was as dark and quiet a night as it ever got in our neighborhood. He fell asleep next to me, and I was awake the whole night because he snored loudly and kicked me a few times. I was annoyed with him then, but now I'd do anything to have that time back. You're going to have a moment like that too, a time when you wish for things to be back the way they used to be, even if they weren't perfect. In the flickering candlelight, shadows crept up and down the hallway like ghosts. I remembered the boy I saw in the office at Blueford just before I passed out. Was it Weddle? It might have just been the hit to my head. Maybe I was losing it. Or maybe he was still with me somehow, watching over me the way I was supposed to watch over him. "I'm so sorry I didn't protect you, little brother." At 7, my alarm blasted me awake like it did every other morning, only this time I felt like kicking it. I must have slept an hour or two at most. The last place I wanted to go was Blueford High School. Homework. I couldn't remember what my last assignment was, even though it was just a day ago. When you're trying to survive, schoolwork is the first thing you drop. Teachers never seem to understand this. On my way to school, I passed the parking lot where Frankie split my head open. Seeing it gave me the chills. And I got that gnawing feeling too, the one that tells you something bad is about to happen. I looked around just to make sure Frankie wasn't following me. I kept picturing him standing at my front door, my bandana in his hand, the same hand that held a gun to my face. He wasn't anywhere in sight, not yet. At Blueford, I climbed the steps and noticed a few students looking at me funny. One kid was staring right at the stitches along my hairline. "You got a problem, Holmes?" I said. The kid shook his head and walked away. Yeah, that's what I thought. Inside, it got worse. It seemed everyone was secretly eyeing me as I walked down the hallway. "Yo, that's that dude who got kicked out of his old school for selling drugs," someone whispered. "Don't mess with him. He might be packing," someone else mumbled. Listening to them, you'd think I was one of the terrorists the FBI was always hunting. Rumors in school are like that, spreading like a fire no matter how false they are. At my locker, I spotted someone familiar coming down the hallway toward me. Vicky. What was I going to do about her? With Hector and Frankie on the street, there was only one answer, and I hated it. Vicky and me met my first day at Blueford. I noticed her the second I stepped into Mr. Mitchell's English class. He was in the middle of telling kids not to be late when I walked in with my attitude. My timing was so perfect that a few kids busted out laughing, and I played along. Vicky smiled, and when I saw her, I almost forgot how angry I was that my mom had dragged me across the city to Blueford. "Excuse me, sir, you have a guest," Steve Morris said, pointing me out to the teacher so he could get a laugh from his friends. I knew right then I didn't like him. For a second, everyone stared at me like I was from another planet, like they never saw a kid from the barrio before. At Zamora High, almost everyone was brown like me. Blueford was the opposite, more black kids than anything else, although there were some Latinos, Asians, and a few white kids mixed in. If you ask me, Vicky was the finest Latina in the school. I ended up sitting behind her and found myself daydreaming about her soft brown skin and the way her black hair spiraled down her back. Even her laugh sounded pretty, like music, if you can believe that. My boys would never stop teasing me if I told them this. "What's up with you, Holmes? You getting soft now that you're sweating that Blueford girl?" Chago would say. It was true. Dude shouldn't talk, though. When his first girlfriend broke up with him, he got drunk and cried. I never told Frankie because he would have made a big joke out of it. He was cruel like that. Mr. Mitchell put me and Vicky in a group to go over a homework assignment. We had to write an essay about heroes. Both of us ended up writing about someone in our family. Vicky wrote about her grandmother who died, and I wrote about Güero. I gotta admit it was the first time schoolwork ever helped me meet a girl. But it's true. When we read each other's papers, something clicked. That Saturday, we spent the whole afternoon together. We walked in the park and grabbed some pizza. It was like one of those corny TV shows. But it was nice. For once, I wasn't the troublemaker who kept getting in fights, the son who almost hit his mom, or the thug about to throw his life away. Instead, I was Martin Luna, the person Vicky liked. I had such a good time, I felt guilty, like I was lying about who I really was. I even tried to tell her about it. It was the first time I was so honest with the girl. "Vicky, you and me, we're different from each other," I had said, looking for the right words. "Really different." "So?" she said. "What's that mean?" "It just seems like you shouldn't be here with me," I told her. My face burned when I spoke. If she knew me and my homeboys were planning to shoot someone, she'd never even look at me. I hated being so dishonest, but how could I tell her the truth? She touched my hand then, just for half a second. My heart skipped. "Martin, when I first saw you, I was like, oh no, who is this boy acting so hard? But when you wrote about your brother, you seemed so sad. That's when I decided I wanted to talk to you." For an instant, I thought she was feeling sorry for me, and I nearly walked away just like that. I don't want any girl's pity. I ain't no one's charity case. But she stopped me. "It's not like that," she said, pushing her hair behind her ears so she could focus on me. She rested her hand on her neck for a second. I couldn't take my eyes off her. "It's like you're more real than the guys around here." I couldn't tell what was real anymore, but I knew I wanted her to always feel that way about me. And in a way, I understood what she was saying. Compared to other girls I knew, she was more real too. Deeper. But who was I kidding? After what happened with Frankie, everything was different. We had to end things. I took a deep breath as Vicky approached my locker. For the first time since we met, I didn't want to see her. Don't get me wrong. It's not that I don't like her. It's the opposite. I like her too much to let her get tangled in my mess. "Martin," she said, stopping just behind me. "Are you okay? I can't believe you're back in school." I watched as she struggled not to stare at the stitches on my forehead. "I was so worried about you." Her words burned my insides, like she was poking deep into my chest with a hot iron. Looking at her dark hair, her soft skin, and her concerned eyes, I knew I had to get her as far from me as possible. "Don't think I'm crazy. It's what I learned from Güero's death. If I'd kept him away from me and Frankie, he wouldn't have been on the street when the bullets were flying. It's a mistake I won't make again. The bandana on my door told me everything I needed to know. The only way to keep Vicky safe was to keep her away from me." "I'm fine, Vicky. Just a little bump on my head. No big thing." I shifted my books and tried to hide what I was thinking. She stared at me oddly, her eyes intense and focused like twin spotlights on my face. I wished I could hide myself from her gaze, but there was nowhere to go. "You scared me yesterday. All I could think about last night was your face and that cut on your head." She shook as if the image in her mind hurt her somehow. "Come on, Vicky, you know I'm hard-headed. It takes more than a little cut to keep me down." One of my books slipped out of my hand and slammed down to the locker floor with a loud crash. Vicky jumped at the sound and took a deep breath. Overhead, the first bell rang, and people in the hallway started rushing off. We had 2 minutes to get to class, 2 minutes for me to force myself to act this way. "What happened yesterday? You have to tell me." "Just an argument that got a little out of hand. We're cool now, though," I said, picking up the textbook and trying to act calm. "It ain't nothing to worry about." She stepped back and cocked her head like I just insulted her. I pretended to organize some things in my locker. "What's wrong with you, Martin?"
"What?"
"You're acting different." "I'm sorry, Vic, but it's been a crazy time for me. There's just a lot of things I need to sort out right now."
"You want to talk to me about it?"
I looked at her, and for a second I didn't know what to say. Of course I wanted to talk to her. I wanted to listen to her, and part of me wanted to kiss her right there in the hallway. But the best thing I could do was to get her to walk away from me, and the only way to do that was to make her want to leave. Asking her wouldn't work. She was too stubborn for that. I learned that when Steve Morris and his football player friends jumped me on the street. "Just leave, Vicky," I told her when he and his boys climbed out of his car. "Go," I yelled. but she didn't budge until my crew showed up and she knew I was safe. It was all too close. She could have been punched or stabbed or worse, and it would have been my fault. I couldn't live with myself if that happened. If it meant I had to lose her to protect her, so be it. We gotta get to class, I said, acting like she meant nothing to me. Her jaw dropped. I don't understand. What happened to you? Did that bump on the head make you forget Saturday? You know, the day we spent together in the park? I remember everything, Vicky. What do you want me to say? I asked bitterly. It's not like it was that special. It was just a walk, that's all. I lied. The truth was that it was the best day I had since Weddle died. Vicky shook her head at me. I'm so sorry, girl, I wanted to say. But it's for your own good. Frankie's coming. You gotta stay away from me. The second bell rang loudly. We had a minute to get to class. Vicky was never late before, but I could tell she would be today. It was all my fault, but what could I do? You're being such a jerk right now. What's your problem? I got more problems than you know, I wanted to say, but I bit my tongue. The only problem I have right now is you, Vicky, I said and turned away, hating myself. I left her standing in the hallway alone.